From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. Hope you haven't had a great week and have great weekend plans. But in the meantime, we have a lot to go over today. The president of the United, former president of the United States, is heading over to Montana to help defeat John Tester and help Tim Sheehy, a former Navy SEAL. He's about 2 or 3 points away. We know the vice president is going to be in Arizona today. So they've been barnstorming with their new running mate, Tim Walz. We'll talk about that. Admiral James Stavridis is standing by. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Their military in Israel is very unique to most. The integration between the different armed services is quite remarkable. It's unlike any other nation in the world, second to the United States. So I think they can take on most enemies that are at least 5 to 10 times their size. And they've done it time and time again.
Officer Cameron Hamilton weighing in. Threats from Hezbollah and Iran continue, but only the action in Gaza as IDF pounds Hamas. Who will fight? Who will light the fuse that blows up this region? If anybody. Plus, there's a huge push to get all sides at the table to talk about a ceasefire. Is that the best move for Israel?
Number two.
The retirement packet alone takes months to process. You knew that your unit was deploying. I can't think of anyone that wouldn't want to deploy with their surrogate children. That's what a sergeant major is.
David Bellavia weighing in. Get it right. We salute Governor Walz's service, but the truth about his exit and his deployments needs to be clarified. It's already causing the Harris ticket a degree of embarrassment as vets are calling him out.
Number one.
We'd like to do three debates. We think we should do three debates. We think Fox and ABC, and we also have CBS is going to do the vice presidential debate.
Glad that he's finally agreed to a debate on September 10th. I'm looking forward to it, and hope he shows up.
He's also talking about two other debates. The vice president missed that. Trump speaks for an hour, and Kamala for 1 minute. Mass media puts her on a pedestal and then wraps her in bubble wrap. Not us, but at least they do agree on at least one debate. So we'll have some engagement, the latest, that's not scripted. We'll have the latest on campaign 2024. But let's bring in Admiral James Stavridis. Admiral, first off, I'd like to bring you to a region. I thought last week by this time there would be some explosion or retribution attempted by Iran and Hezbollah after the killing of their leaders in their respective countries. Why do you think it hasn't happened?
Two reasons, Brian. One is Iran is in immense internal turmoil right now. They have a brand new president. He's more reformist. I put that in heavy air quotes, but was hoping to kind of crack open and get the West engaged because the economics of Iran are so bad. So point one, the Iranians don't want a regional war. And point two, neither do the Israelis. Although they can fight on multiple fronts, they've shown again and again the ability to do that. They would like to continue to concentrate on Hamas in Gaza, not get tangled up with Hezbollah. So they are sending signals of real retaliation if we have another round here. So while there certainly will be some kind of response from Iran, I think it'll be a bit muted, and it'll probably come from their proxy creature to the north, Hezbollah. Still looking for that over the next few days. But the good news is I don't think this one is going to go to a wider war in the Middle East.
So right now there's a lot of action in Gaza. In fact, General Jack Keane told me an hour ago he believes that Netanyahu is putting his foot on the gas. He says the 98th Division began operational activity in Khan Yunis, where we think Sinwar was. He also indicated they thought they had him 12 days ago or his location. Yeah. So, and in Rafah, everybody who said don't go into Rafah, it's going to be a disaster. Well, all they found, they cleared the civilians out, and they found a ton of weapons depots and terror tunnels that the Egyptians had to know about. Wouldn't you say, Admiral?
No question. And I'm glad you raised the word tunnels, at the end of the day, the military center of gravity here is to destroy that tunnel complex. 400 miles of tunnels. Gaza is only 20 miles long by 5 miles wide, but 400 miles of tunnels. The Israelis are correctly and methodically destroying them. They're flooding some of them. They're collapsing others. They're sealing them off in ways that will essentially be permanent. So they got to continue the fight to destroy that center of gravity. And then number two, in the end, they're never going to allow Sinwar to escape. They will find him and kill him. So those are the two military objectives remaining. And I'm with the Israelis. You continue until you get those two things done. You do everything you can to minimize collateral damage, and I think the Israelis have done that by and large. But this is not the time for the Israelis to back off.
So why is that never brought up? Everybody wants the hostages out and wants the killing to stop. But how this ends will decide if it starts again. Why is that never brought up?
Because there's always a tendency in these situations to kind of skip over the hard part. And the hard part is the military piece of this. The Israelis, you point out correctly, really handled Rafah perfectly. They're closing in on the two objectives I said a moment ago. I think you can put on a parallel track the idea of a ceasefire. That'll turn into a three-stage process, ceasefire for 6 weeks, Arab peacekeeping force, third step, bring the Palestinian Authority, not Hamas, back into a position of at least engagement in Gaza. Those things are going to happen. But the military piece of this, the hard part, that's got to get done first.
So U.S. fighter jets arrived. The Raptor arrived in the Middle East, armed with a warning for Iran. I guess that's the message. I know this stuff is very costly. I also think it's necessary to agree. What is the message there that the Secretary of Defense is giving?
Yeah, I think in sum, it's, hey, Iran, if you go big, we are going to go big right back alongside the Israelis. I wish that Lloyd Austin had further deployed another aircraft carrier. And you remember right after October 7th, they correctly parked two aircraft carriers in the eastern Mediterranean. Right now we've got one that's doing swing duty between the Indian Ocean, Arabian Gulf, occasionally up into the eastern Med. We had to put two right there and say to Iran, if you go big, we're coming in with Israel. We're going to take out Hezbollah entirely.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to see what's going to happen there, and we'll see if talks show up, because we don't know. Sinwar is the new head of Hamas, the political wing and the military wing. Do you think he's going to come out of a tunnel and show up in Qatar?
No, I don't. And if he does, he's going to be evaporated by an Israeli strike. They're going to find and kill Sinwar, and they should. And the fact that Hamas has elevated him to lead it, it would be like taking General Custer, if he had survived the Battle of Little Bighorn, and putting him in charge of not only the U.S. Army, but the U.S. government. The guy is a failed general, a failed political strategist, and he deserves to be killed, and eventually the Israelis will do so.
So what's your take on Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, and his 23 years of service, and the command sergeant general and just sergeant major, and command sergeant major? Where do you stand on the way he's using the rank? How about that? How it fits into politics?
I think that any veteran who has served honorably, from J.D. Vance, who did 4 credible years as a U.S. Marine and deployed forward, in his case, into Iraq, although he has often said he never saw close combat, from that level, 4 years, and then gets out, I'm fine with that. Or someone like Tim Walz, who does 24 years in the Guard, deploys forward to a unit in Europe, and these were under my command, that are supporting forward operations, but he does not see close combat. To someone like, if Bill McCraven decides to run for office, I don't think he will, but let's say he does. He's got, just like me, 37 years. He's seen plenty of combat. That's fine for him to talk about. And I honor all their service. And I do think veterans shouldn't be in a position of trying to score, you know, Pete Buttigieg's service in Afghanistan against J.D. Vance's service in Iraq against Tim Walz's service. Let's just honor all of their service. Let's park that because that's not the topic of the moment. And let's go back to talking about the issues that really matter for the American people.
Does it bother you when people embellish their service, being somebody that is dedicated their whole life? You spend most of your life in uniform.
I think of embellishment as putting on a Bronze Star medal that you didn't receive. And that's well documented. Any number of people have masqueraded as Navy SEALs when they were, in fact, maybe just mechanics on the flight deck of a carrier. Other people have put on a Bronze Star that they never wore. Yeah, that bothers me. That's called stolen valor. That is something that ought to be exposed. I don't see a case of that in Governor Tim Walz. And by the way, just, you know me, I'm not political, but if I were advising the Trump campaign, I'd stay off that issue because you got to look back at the top of that ticket and bone spurs in Vietnam. I don't want to open that can of worms. Nobody should. We ought to just focus on the honorable service of both of the vice presidential candidates.
Yeah, I thought it was Tim Walz that brought it up on the stage about the 4 years that the J.D. Vance served. So I thought that was bizarre to bring up. I did not know he had this type of vulnerability elsewhere. It's going to be interesting. You know what I care more about? I care more about what they're going to do for defense, because I see that Kamala Harris has said, I want to cut the defense budget in half and give it to underprivileged communities. That worries me more than anything else. That's the issue we should be talking about.
I agree completely, and that is why I hope there's going to be not just one debate, but two or three debates, because then you have a chance to get into international issues, cybersecurity, defense budgets, shipbuilding. I want to hear that debate on both sides. And I hope that we have a very full conversation, both from those two and from the vice presidential candidates, about defense and defense spending, which needs to continue. Newsflash, we're in a very dangerous world. You and I talk often about all of these, but it's Ukraine and Russia. It's rising China. We're seeing Venezuela to the south becoming increasingly radicalized. And then finally, as we've talked about quite a bit, it's the Middle East. We need to stand with Israel. We're not going to do that by cutting the defense budget.
Yeah, two more quick topics. Ukraine is powered by Western arms, has stunned Russia and many, and gone into Russia, crossed the border with 1,000 guys thanks to the armored vehicles they've gotten. They're into the Kursk region, occupying villages in Russia for the first time. And people say, well, that's provocative. You're escalating. How does Admiral Stavridis feel?
I think the provocation was the complete invasion of Ukraine, the brutal war crimes that have been committed, the attacks on civilians. What I see by the Ukrainians is to be obviously applauded. And from a military perspective, it really complicates Putin's situation. Now he's got to swing troops up to deal with a knife blow that's coming into his gut that he felt would never happen because the Ukrainians wouldn't have the capability to cross his borders. Wait a minute. That's happening in front of him right now, and I really applaud that. And by the way, I think the two best military things that have happened in the last 2 weeks are the attack inside Russia by Ukraine, and the other is the Israelis being able to take out Hanya, the leader of that organization, in Tehran. I say well done, Israel, and well done, Ukraine.
Absolutely. Let the good guys win. That's what I say. Anything it takes. All they're asking for is our support. They're not asking us to fight. Admiral, thanks so much. Always great. Have a great weekend.
You too, Brian. Have a great summer, too. What's left of it.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
You got it. I'll come back and I'll take some calls. 1-866-408-7669. Deng Josh Crash Hour joins us. Oh, bring us inside this political landscape, some of the dramatics that took place yesterday and are likely to take place today. And Rachel Campos Duffy in just a moment. Don't move. A lot going on.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick, the show, as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform. And watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think it's very important to have debates, and we've agreed with Fox on a date of September 4th. We've agreed with NBC, fairly full agreement, subject to them, on September 10th. And we've agreed with ABC on September 25th. So we have those three dates.
So the President of the United States made a lot of news yesterday. Number one, willing to take questions from anybody at his residence any moment. We got spoiled for 4 years. Then we had a president didn't say anything. Nobody cared until he was failed so miserably in that debate. Then people were demanding to find out where he was, demanding for him to hold a press conference, watching him do press conferences, three network interviews. What has to happen is she's got to fall down. I mean, her ratings got to drop to the point where they say we got to put her out. And when they go to put her right now, they feel as though they don't have to take any games. They don't have to do any interviews. So why play? I just go up and I make the same speech. She's literally made the same speech for three straight weeks. Same applause line, same delivery. You've seen the side by side. What she's not counting on is where everybody's covering the speeches. So we're listening to the same speech. Tim Walz is there, not there. He's named, he's not named. He gets into the same applause lines. What about Trump? I mean, does anybody think two Trump rallies have been the same? Not really. So I thought this was interesting. Peggy Noonan, who's a conservative columnist, a Bush 41 and Ronald Reagan speechwriter from Massapequa, Long Island, by the way, where I'm from. She brought up an interesting point. She's not big into Trump, but not at all. She said, what does it mean that she picked Tim Walz out of all of her other moderate choices? She says, I believe this means she's not going broad, but she's going deep. She doesn't intend to win this by going an inch to the right, but through the left-wing turnout, the young minorities, those who haven't steadily voted in the past, if ever. She is going to give them a jolt, a straight shot of progressive. The future is left-wing. Getting them to show up is the strategy. Centrists and Trump-rejecting Republicans aren't the central concern. If they can be won over through the small symbolic or stylistic moves, fine. Everyone's welcome. But they're not the focus. Getting our people is the focus. Wow. That's a scary America. That's what she's going for. Boiled down by one of the best columnists in the country, Peggy Noonan. John in California. Hey, John.
Good morning, Brian. I wanted to bring up something that I'm observing.
Yep.
Every speech by Kamala Harris is being carried by almost every network.
Yes.
Okay? Trump's rallies are not. The only thing being covered by them are the stuff, mistakes, and, you know, the negative stuff that they pull out of it. He needs to do something, like these press conferences, to get his word out to everybody.
I know. I mean, they're going to have to start carrying it because it's going to be newsworthy and they're going to get closer to the debates. But nothing you can do about it, John. We can't program their channels. We really can't. You know, I think that we're going to do it. I mean, I do my show Saturday night at 9 o'clock. This will be one of the few Saturdays where I'm not going to be covering Trump rallies because there is none. There's only one on Friday. And by the time my show starts, people have seen it already. But president's got to stay busy. He's got to see what the networks pick up. When he makes news, they'll roll it. And he's got to find a way to get her to do an interview.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
President Trump had a press conference today. He talked about a lot of things. I wonder if you have a reaction to what Trump had.
Well, I'm glad that he's finally agreed to a debate on September 10th. I'm looking forward to it, and hope he shows up.
Are you open to more debates?
I am happy to have that conversation about an additional debate for after September 10th, for sure.
He promotes two more debates.
Like I said, happy to have that conversation.
That was just a small portion of a small give and take with reporters. She's done it for, that was 60 seconds. Trump did 60 minutes, if not more. And she will not answer any questions. She just gets through her surrogates. She talks about changes in positions. that she had very significant changes. So, for example, she wanted to cut the defense budget. She's on the record. She wants to make illegal private insurance. She wants to decriminalize border crossings. She wants to end fracking. She wants to end offshore drilling. Okay, pretty significant things, don't you think? She wants to have a guaranteed income. Who's paying for that? I mean, she co-sponsored Medicare for All. That means universal health care. America doesn't want that. Pretty sure we'll never pass that. When you're with Bernie Sanders co-sponsoring something, no, you're out on a limb. Are you walking it back? Why? Why are you walking it back? If you believe that, stick with it. Trump wants to build a wall. A lot of people thought he was crazy. He didn't change his mind. And he'd tell you a million times why. You know, he wants to raise tariffs. Some people don't like it. Here are the tariffs, and here's why. This is a way to bring manufacturing back. I don't like these trade deals. I'm redoing them. Oh, leave them alone. We want international trade deals. It provides peace and security around the world when people are invested in each other's economies. Trump said, no, I'm not going to do that. Now it's common thought. And most Republicans have backed off that free trade mindset. But Trump knew, you knew exactly where he stood. You knew why he was doing it. And then you could vote for him or not. What they're trying to do in 90 days without running a primary, without giving her a single vote, her failing epically in 2020, and then giving it to her in 2024 and saying you need 90 days to win, I think is the most fundamental un-American, not unconstitutional, but un-American thing I've ever heard. And I don't think that any journalist would support it. Josh Krasshauer is the editor-in-chief of Jewish Insider, Fox News radio political analyst. He joins us now. Josh, welcome back.
Hey, great to be back, Brian.
Josh, every time I talk to you, there's something unprecedented going on. What I'm witnessing now with this nomination now 2 or 3 weeks old and the honeymoon that's still lasting, without giving a single interview or defining or putting anything, any of your policies on a website, this is all unprecedented. Why is it acceptable?
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, one of the other bits of that 60-second comments she made yesterday was that she was only planning to do one interview in the next 21 days in the month of August. That's remarkable. Like, even after the convention, she doesn't sound like she's eager to talk to the press, answer the questions, explain where she stands on policy. Look, it's interesting to see some of the mainstream media coverage about how smart politically they're saying, oh, this is really, really, really savvy political strategy not to submit for an interview. The other side of it is sort of obvious, Brian. It's the fact that she's not good in those sets. She's had some embarrassing moments with her NBC interview with Lester Holt, where she just totally bombed her comments on immigration and her role as border security czar. She's, you know, one of her first things as vice president, one of her first interviews was to speak to a West Virginia television outlet and anger Joe Manchin so much he still holds a grudge from that day. She is not good at explaining what and then she's also CNN town hall back in her 2019 campaign is when she's kind of outlined some of her very, very far left positions that came back to haunt her in that campaign. She's not good off the cuff. She's given some good stump speeches. She's reading the teleprompter at the rallies, and she's done a good enough job with that. But her biggest weakness in her public life has been explaining where she stands on policy and doing an effective job in explaining those positions in interviews. So that's why they're kind of hiding her. We talked about the basement strategy, Brian, in 2020 for President Biden. This is sort of a rally strategy, not have her submit for interviews, but have the big rallies, big scripted speeches, but not doing interviews with the mainstream media. And that's going to be a problem. I don't think it can last forever. I mean, look, they hope they can run out the clock. There's only 90 or so days left until the general election. Early voting starts even earlier than that in many states, Brian. But at some point after the convention, she's going to need to explain where she stands on so many important issues that are so relevant to the American public.
So my jaw was on the floor after that first debate when I saw CNN just blow up Joe Biden. Can't do the job. I've never seen it bad. There's panic on the Democrats. And it didn't stop until he was finally out. And every time I put on CNN, I go, I feel like I'm watching Fox. You know, all the things we were saying, you know, is he failing? Is he having trouble walking? You know, why is he having a debating? Why is he not working? Why is he not working past 4 o'clock? That speech didn't make any sense. That interview didn't go too well. And I'm thinking to myself, why are they reporting on him? And my jaw was on the floor. And then he's gone. Gone. And now in comes Kamala Harris. And I can't say I'm as surprised, but I'm moderately surprised Outside Van Jones making a few comments, all I see is what a great job she's done. She's a female Barack Obama. Look at all that she's accomplished. Meanwhile, it's the same speech every single time. Tim Walz couldn't be more left compared to the chances that she had to get moderates in there in battleground states. They don't even acknowledge that. Now he's a football coach, not a left-wing governor who wants taxpayer dollars to pay for everything. So there's been no analysis. And this is what Jeff Zeleny said yesterday. The whole push to get her to do interviews is something the media wants, not the public wants. That is just fundamentally, we are a mouthpiece for the public, in theory, at least, right?
Well, that goes against every journalistic instinct I ever learned. Right. You don't want interviews that you're literally saying this is great political strategy without explaining the reason that she's making these decisions is because she's worried that if she submits to these interviews, it's going to hurt her politically, that she's going to have to explain why she supposedly has evolved on issues like fracking, on issues like immigration. She ran one of the most progressive campaigns in 2020, didn't really showcase a more moderate side as vice president. She was to the left of Joe Biden on a number of issues. And now we don't hear from her on policy. This is a vibes campaign. They're hoping to kind of use the good vibes of replacing Biden on the ticket, get the energy that granted, like, she's brought a lot of energy in the party. They've filled up these arenas and she's gotten a lot of excitement at these campaign events, but they've been policy free. They've been substance free. And ultimately, once you get that honeymoon period when you get the excitement about your new campaign, you get the launch, you get to have those moments, you have to start answering questions. People want to know where you stand on so many important issues. She ran a campaign in 2020 that was extremely progressive. She certainly has an obligation, I would think, to explain where she stands and whether she agrees with the same positions that she held back in that campaign.
I mean, isn't it frustrating to follow someone around and they never talk to you?
Well, Of course, if you're a reporter, I mean, I think everyone should be trying to get the first interview with the vice president. I think it's good that we have a debate September 10th. That's going to be highly scrutinized. I think Trump needs to up his game. You know, that's one of the big questions I've had on the Republican side, that why Trump isn't doing campaign events, why he's not doing rallies, why he hasn't been responding himself to some of the arguments that Harris and Walz have been making on the campaign trail. But that's also the other part of the equation. When is the Republican ticket going to be a little more aggressive and really start framing these issues?
You know, in the whole 2025 plan, if every think tank, conservative or liberal, that came out with a plan is going to be stapled to the Republican or Democrat candidate, I think that would be totally unfair. I mean, they're told 2025 with 900 pages, this is what they're going to do, folks. Really? Either President Trump doesn't read anything and he just wants flashcards, or now he's co-authoring a 900-page think tank doctrine that's going to revolutionize the country to the Heritage Foundation's thoughts. I mean, some of that stuff might be great. Some of it sounds like it's extreme. But why are they going out of their way to pin it to Trump? Because some Trumpers were on it? I mean, that cannot be effective.
Yeah, look, I think the important picture is that, like, every candidate has associations with problematic organizations, but certainly Harris has a whole slew of associations with very, very progressive groups. I think, you know, everything should be up for grabs. Everything should be – that's why you want to have these interviews, to ask everyone where they stand on policy and where they stand on their – whether they endorse what a certain group stands for that's close to them. I think the Project 2020 – I mean, the fact that the two top strategists for Trump's campaign, Susie Wiles and Chris LaCivita, were so outspoken against Project 2025 and distanced themselves so aggressively, I think made that a story. They're showing that little divide within the Republican Party and the conservative movement. But any of those questions are going to be fair game for any candidates, or at least should be.
All right, so you retweeted something from the Washington Examiner. It's Tim Walz repeatedly hosted a Muslim cleric who celebrated the October 7th and shared pro-Hitler website link. And the guy's name is Asad Zaman of the Muslim American Society of Minnesota. In May 23, they came for a meeting about a mosque security and Walz's evidently, as governor, Zaman also spoke at a 2020 event to call for a peaceful protest within the with the governor during the riots in Minnesota. They also supported, this guy also came out and supported the October 7th attacks. So that's been pretty apparent, and he doesn't seem to be backing off this relationship.
Well, we're trying to get response from the Harris and from Walz himself about this association. Now, these meetings took place before October 7th, but this guy is about as extreme as it gets. His pro-Hitler postings, and like you said, Brian, he celebrated the Hamas attack after October 7th. You know, this is one of the reasons why I think a lot of people were scratching their heads about Governor Walz as the vice presidential pick, because he's got not only does he have a very progressive record in Minnesota, but there is to win as a Democrat in the state of Minnesota, the party is has a lot of elements, at least, that are very far left. To kind of keep that Democratic Party together, you've got to pander to some of the more I would call them even, you know, more extreme than just progressive. And then this is a group that or an individual, at least, he thought there was some political benefit, I guess, from having these meetings. He's going to have to answer for them. This is someone who clearly has a whole litany of anti-Semitic comments, and it's a real problem. Ilhan Omar has got her primary coming up next Tuesday in the state of Minnesota. She's someone who's made her fair share of anti-Israel and anti-Semitic comments, and that's another association that Governor Walz has had to be, he's been scrutinized over.
Absolutely. Josh, it's going to be an exciting 90 days. All we want is just a fair fight, and you got to be able to speak and tell me what you think. Not you, but the Democratic ticket. Josh Krasauer, thanks. When we come back, she just spent quality time in Allentown, Pennsylvania, finding out in that battleground state what people are thinking now that they have a brand new choice for president and for Senate. Rachel Campos-Duffy joins us next.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
How has the economy under Biden affected your small business?
Well, listen, first of all, you know, it hasn't been the same. I feel like under President Trump, it was better. There was more people spending money. People were like traveling more, spending, getting haircuts more often. Right now, I've seen a little bit down.
All our utilities are up compared to what it was. Residents are complaining about rent and utilities, and that was never a complaint under the 4 years that the Trump administration.
I was a Democrat, and I started to realize the policies that I was voting in wasn't my standards or what I believed. So I was in the wrong side of the aisle. So I decided to do my own investigating, started to watch my own rallies, do research, and I noticed that I was a conservative, a righty, and those were my standards, I believe. And so I decided to go with Trump.
So those are some of the interviews that Rachel Campos-Duffy did on yesterday for our show today, and she's going to be hosting her show on Fox and Friends Weekend from 6 to 10, and she was in Pennsylvania, Allentown, Pennsylvania, Rachel. And what did you expect to find? What did you find?
What I discovered is that Billy Joel wrote a song about Allentown, and yeah. I was taught that by
who?
None other than Brian Kilmeade.
And you still don't, did you hear any? You heard
I did,
some
you know what,
it.
I heard the song, I actually liked it. I only knew Billy Joel, like Uptown Girl. Like, I actually knew more about Christie Brinkley.
That is the worst
than,
song.
than Billy
I mean,
Joel.
That is like a childish song. That's like from the 1950s.
I know. Now,
and it's an old relationship that didn't work.
Yeah, it was an old relationship. Yeah. Well, you know, she was a supermodel.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, she's still looking good.
And you asked the question of the guys on the show, do women like musicians? Because we had some country singers on today. And the answer was yes in this Billy Joel moment. Confirms that
because Billy Joel.
You can't even get a supermodel looking like Billy Joel.
Right. You don't think he's handsome?
No.
All right.
Do you?
No, not really. I don't look at him as a look, but you know, he's so like people, like I said,
he's an
girls,
icon.
Like if you make a lot of money, you have a great job, or you're a musician or a sculptor, you get women.
Yes. What if you play the clarinet?
Probably.
Can you get women? I don't know if people know Brian Kilmeade.
Played the clarinet.
So did I, by the way.
Did you play the clarinet?
I did, but
why
not very well.
Why did you bring that up?
I did, but you were talking and you didn't hear me.
Do you know the one thing about the clarinet? If you put it down, you can't just pick it up and go like in the guitar. I guess you could do that because your mouth has to be in shape.
You know what? I just found the clarinet to be super unsanitary. Did you guys share reeds with people?
Probably not. No, I hope not.
That's disgusting. You forget your reed and then like somebody let you borrow. It was just gross.
That's true. It's like making out with the person.
Yeah, it's like making out with someone else's reed. A lot of mono in those days.
So there was much more, even on TV shows.
Yeah.
They used to talk about mono. No one gets mono anymore.
No.
Or if they do, they don't want to
win. They get COVID.
Right. And they still win races.
Yeah, and they still win races.
I don't think it's ever going to come here, by the way, COVID-19. I don't see it being a problem.
No, I think we get the whole joke now.
Not anymore.
So let's go back to Allentown.
Hispanic votes.
So Allentown is the third biggest city in Pennsylvania. It's also a majority Hispanic. It's 54% Hispanic. And there's a reason. As you said, and as you pointed out with this song by Billy Joel, it's a working class town. And Hispanics are firmly part of the working class. And I believe that is why Trump, after all these years, is finally resonating with Hispanics, because they're starting to understand, because they saw, you know, when he came on the scene, it was like he talked about the border and the left was very effective in saying that's racist. He hates you. He wants to deport you. And then in comes Joe Biden and they open the border and they're seeing what's happening to their town. They're seeing what's happening to their wages because they're competing with illegal labor. Right. And so they're saying, wait a minute, there's this one guy, Donald Trump, who's standing up for the working class. He wants to take on China. He wants to take on illegals who are competing for our jobs. He wants to open up energy. Think about that in a state like Pennsylvania, which we know is related to prices.
He wants to keep the gangsters and killers out, and they're here.
Yeah, exactly. And who basically come into their neighborhoods, because if you're rich, you have private security, right? You can afford all kinds of security, but also, you know,
nicer neighborhoods, gated communities.
Nicer neighborhoods, gates, et cetera. So he has now become the working class. And the question is, are Hispanics now seeing themselves more as the working class than as sort of a block, a racial identity block? And I think that's happening.
Do you think also the fact that we now have Uzbeks and Chinese, obviously Eastern Europeans, Africans, obviously it's not anti-Hispanic because it's no longer all Hispanic
coming
across?
Right, there's like a 8,000% increase of Chinese illegals coming over the border, military age. People are understanding that this is dangerous. And that it's hurting America.
Rachel Campos, you help Fox News 6 to 10 Saturday and Sunday,
yes,
a.m.
I'll be there. You will too.
Yes.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here, coming your way. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where it's been pretty much raining. I'm not complaining because the people in the South got a lot worse, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Northern Florida. But it has been raining here for pretty much 3 or 4 days. Hopefully, it'll be nice on Sunday or sometime this weekend. This hour, we'll be joined by Wall Street Journal's Bill McGurn, and that'll be great. But meanwhile, I'll be able to take your calls, and we'll get to the bottom of a bunch of things that are happening. We know the former president of the United States is in Montana. He's en route there. He's going to help out Tim Sheehy. Beat John Tester. He's trailing by 3 or 4 points. John Tester is so worried he's not going to the DNC. He doesn't want to be seen as a Democrat. And then we have Kamala Harris in Arizona. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Their military in Israel is very unique to most. The integration between the different armed services is quite remarkable. It's unlike any other nation in the world, second to the United States. So I think they can take on most enemies that are at least 5 to 10 times their size. And they've done it time and time again.
Much to the chagrin of the Arab world, threats from Hezbollah and Iran continue. But where's the action? It's actually in Gaza as the IDF pounds Hamas, who will light the fuse that blows up this region, if anybody. Plus, there's a huge push to get all sides to the table first.
Number two.
The retirement packet alone takes months to process. You knew that your unit was deploying. I can't think of anyone that wouldn't want to deploy with their surrogate children. That's what a sergeant major is.
That is David Bellavia, a decorated veteran. Get it right. We salute Governor Walz's service, but the truth about his exit and his deployments need to be clarified. It's already causing the Harris ticket embarrassment as vets are calling him out.
Number one.
We'd like to do three debates. We think we should do three debates. We think Fox and ABC, and we also have CBS is going to do the vice presidential debate.
Glad that he's finally agreed to a debate on September 10th. I'm looking forward to it, and hope he shows up.
Yeah, but they also want two more debates. He just ignored that. Trump speaks for an hour, and Kamala for 1 minute. Mass media puts her on a pedestal and then puts bubble wrap around her, but not us. But at least they do agree there is one debate where they could have some unscripted interaction. The latest from Campaign 2024. Let's bring in Eli Lake, Free Press columnist, host of Reeducation Podcast. Eli, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be here, Brian. I love the show.
Well, thank you.
And
I mean,
if I can just ask your listeners,
yes,
on the Honestly podcast feed, I have a great episode this week called The Election of Laughter and Forgetting, which looks at the last 5 weeks from the lens of the Czech novelist Milan Kundera. Don't be intimidated. It's you'll be able to follow it, but I think it's an important lesson because the memory hulling, which is a term invented by George Orwell, of the big, big question on all of these headlines that you just heard is, who's running the country? I mean, if Joe Biden is not mentally fit enough to run for re-election, is he mentally fit to be the president? And we have the media and our political discourse that seems to entirely drop that question, and that's what that episode is about.
Well, I mean, they have dropped that question. And the whole story about how he got kicked to the curb, Nancy Pelosi is volunteering it. I guess she has a book coming out, but no one seems curious. How a guy that said repeatedly, I am not going anywhere. And when he goes, I got big crowds, three network interviews, four rallies. And then one weekend he decides it's too much. I quit. And he doesn't do it on camera. He waits another day to do it. And when he does do it, then he disappears.
4 days to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. 4 days. And then we don't hear about him. Hear about it for days. We don't know who's running the country. How did Kamala Harris have a whole campaign ready to go? How did she consolidate all those delegates almost immediately? That's hardly somebody they got caught by surprise. There's stories to be written there.
I agree. And that's why I think while the polls have tightened up, I think Trump wins in November because most Americans still won't be able to get their head around that very big question, and little things that dominate, you know, social media, like, you know, JD Vance and cat ladies, really, I don't think most American people are going to be paying attention to those stories, but I think that they all understand that the president shouldn't be the president right now, and they'd like to know who is making these important decisions as the world spins off its axis. You started, you know, when you're talking about the headlines, you know, there might be a regional war in the Middle East, you know, after the weekend. Who knows? We've got a potential revolution in Venezuela. The stock market is, you know, not looking great right now. There are really big things that we need a president to do. That's the job. And I am not persuaded. I don't think most people would be persuaded that Joe Biden is up to that job.
All right. So Joe Biden is one thing. Can you tell me anybody that really would honestly tell you that Kamala Harris is up for the job? She has done nothing for the last 3.5 years. And her stances leading up to when she was trying to be president are horrific. I mean, she's pro sanctuary city. She's pro giving. She co-sponsored a bill, Medicare for All, with Bernie Sanders. We know about the fracking ban. We know about the offshore drilling ban. Well, we know also that she was all for cutting the defense budget. If she doesn't believe things like that, we need to know what changed and why. Don't you think?
100%. And that's the problem here, is that the process of a primary is where those matters are adjudicated. It's normal in our politics. Politicians will flip-flop all the time. But they have to explain it to the voters, and they have to be challenged, you know, within their own primary. And if you, what you have right now, and I don't know if it can continue, is you have a Democratic nominee who is not being challenged in any way by the media. And the only chance is going to be the debates that, you know, that they just agreed to. And it really is incumbent on Trump, not just for his own political interest, but really because he's the one who has to vet Kamala Harris when the mainstream legacy press at this point seems entirely uninterested in demanding interviews, demanding press conferences, and getting her to say in her own words what her campaign aides are whispering. I mean, it's, that to me is amazing. Like, okay, you've changed your position on fracking. Can you explain why? And, you know, be honest. You know, is it because you want to win Pennsylvania? Because that's probably not going to be good enough. People aren't going to believe that you really have changed your position on fracking. So that's, I think, a big thing coming up, and we'll see if she can get away with it.
Look, I think that, you know, the president's speech, for example, at the RNC, first half great, the second half not great. I think that when you're ripping Governor Kemp in Georgia, you're losing.
Not great.
Right. I'll tell you right now what I think is great. I'm not saying my word is gospel, but I'll just give you my opinion. But I also am saying J.D. Vance had a fantastic week. He really showed himself, had the certainty on issues, the willingness to take questions, the walking over to Air Force Two. My opinion, had a fantastic week. They think that he's, I'm watching other channels, they say he's flailing. Now, the President of the United States did 1 hour, unscripted press conference, come one, come all. Listen to some of these responses. Cut 13.
You could feel the desperation in that press conference today.
What you saw was a man who was melting down.
Donald Trump is shook.
This is what Donald Trump looks like when he is losing.
I mean, the old bull was pawing and snorting, and he just couldn't stand being, you know, that the vice president's in the limelight now.
A panicked Donald Trump tries to force his way back into the spotlight. In the laziest way possible, Frank.
Really? Laziest way possible? An hour press conference? Lazy? Okay. This is,
well,
this is a route.
Straight, Kamala. Do it yourself. Do one of those yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
So,
I agree. I mean, listen, I didn't watch the entire thing. I saw some clips of it. It was kind of vintage Trump. He does have the patter of a kind of nightclub comic. This is part of his appeal for a lot of Americans. You know, that we all know that they don't take him literally. They take him seriously. That has been a cliche about Trump for some time. But the bigger point here is that his opponent, the current vice president, seems to only be doing, she's not even really doing media. I mean,
she's doing one speech,
doing rallies,
the same speech over and over again.
And these canned social media things, like her phone call with like one of the influencers and all of that stuff. And I'm just like, well, that's not a substitute for explaining how you have changed your positions, what your vision is for leading the country. But most importantly, what did you know and when did you know it about Joe Biden's declining mental condition? I mean, that is a huge question. And the fact that overnight Joe Biden went from a selfish man trapped by the delusion that he can be president until he's 86, which I think was the reality, to this guy is the second coming of George Washington and Cincinnatus, is reminiscent of like the late Soviet era in the sense that there was, listen, we are not the Soviet Union. There aren't, you know, secret police knocking on people's door in the dead of night, and there aren't gulags and things like that. So it's not a perfect analogy, but this one kind of thing is a weird historical rhyme, because the late Soviet condition in Eastern Europe in particular, but also, you know, in Russia itself, was that most people didn't believe anything from the government or the official media. And I think we're kind of in this position now. So when you play those clips, like saying, oh, he seems like he's breaking down, everything like that, I look at that and I'm saying, okay, yeah, there is going to be a base of people on the coast probably who think that's the real story. But I think there's going to be millions of Americans who are going to look at that and say, you know, I don't believe anything you guys say. And that the media has a real issue right here. There's a legitimation trust crisis that they're facing and that they've been facing, that I think we'll see what happens in November, but I think that's going to be a big part of the story here.
So one of your stories that you wrote, I'm fascinated by, because we're getting to know who Tim Walz is. 70% of the country don't. But the liberal governor from Minnesota, you say all the wrong people are celebrating Tim Walz. In what respect?
Well, what I mean by that is the people, the fringe, or maybe it's not a fringe, the faction of the Democratic Party that thinks that Israel, in its defensive war against Hamas, is committing a genocide, that supported the idea of abolishing the police or defunding the police, that represents a kind of real radicalism, which is much deeper than who wins a particular election or what policy you would like, seem to think that the selection of Tim Walz because he wasn't Josh Shapiro was a great thing and represented a sea change in the Democratic Party. And I don't have any reporting, and I actually don't think that Kamala Harris made the decision of Walz over Shapiro because she herself is anti-Semitic. She's married to a Jewish man, obviously. I think, though, that what it shows is that there's an anti-Semitic faction of the Democratic Party that decided to make it an issue, a litmus test, over Josh Shapiro. And whether she had the best reasons in the world or not for choosing Walz, she has appeared to cave to that pressure. And so if you are not willing to say, you people who call for death to America, you people who celebrate Hamas on college campuses are not part of the Democratic Party, and I don't want your vote, which is what we would call a sister soldier moment for what Bill Clinton did in 1992 when he was running. If she's not willing to do that, then it opens the question of, okay, well, do these people who don't have America's interests in their hearts and don't have, our foreign policy interests that are in their hearts, do these people have a seat at the table in a Kamala Harris administration? Because I don't necessarily think that they're going to dictate policy, but it looks like Kamala Harris is trying to say, we don't want to alienate you. We don't want you to, we still want you to vote for us, and, we're going to listen to you. And so even though she says, she doesn't say it, her national security advisor, Phil Gordon, says she's not interested in an arms embargo in Israel, okay, but she needs to say that, and she needs to say it in saying, if you're interested in an arms embargo in Israel, I think that's nuts, and we don't want to have anything to do with you. But she's not willing to go that far.
She is not. Eli Lake, our guest, the Troy Free Press. No, just the Free Press. You talk about the wrong people celebrating because Jamal Bowman, Ilhan Omar think it's a great thing. And if Absolutely. You really want to be a moderate, if you wanted a moderate, they'd be upset by this, right? And the reason why they were battling for Joe Biden, the last one standing, is because Joe Biden operated as a leftist. These spending programs were not something a moderate would pursue. This green agenda is not something a moderate pursues.
Well, Brian, you're really hitting on something that's so important, because I think that a lot of people didn't notice this. But remember, in July, when we had the crisis for the Biden presidency, who were the people that were all 100% in his corner? It was the squad.
Yep.
AOC came out and said, Biden's our president. He's our guy. Now, why was that their position? Because if you remember, in 2020, Biden was presented as the normie, non-progressive alternative to the hard left kind of candidates that were vying for the nomination. Well, I think it's because they know that Biden was going to lose and that they believed that the DSA wing of the party would be able to take over the party after a collapse in November. And that, to me, was really telling. When I saw Bernie and when I saw AOC coming out four square against Biden, and I realized at that moment, I think we all did, who were the people who were pushing him to the side? Well, it was the kind of Clinton, Obama, people who've been running the Democrats for 30 years. Mm. It wasn't the upstart socialists. The socialists were happy with Biden being the nominee because they thought he would lose. This is my opinion.
Yep.
And they believed that once he did lose, they would be able to run the table. And I think that was their plan. And I don't know if Kamala necessarily complicates that, but that's how they're thinking about it.
Hey, Eli, fascinating conversation. We have to make sure that at least American people get to know what they're voting for. Right now, they have no idea.
Absolutely.
Re-education podcast is a chance to find out the latest and go inside what has happened over the last few weeks just in this political cycle. Eli, thank you.
Thank you, Brian Kilmeade.
You got it. Back in a moment. I'll take your calls, and then we welcome in Bill McGurn of the Wall Street Journal. Don't move.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. Guys, it's Justin's last day. A lot of interns are calling it a summer. Justin, this is your last day, right? Since Justin went to Syracuse undergrad and graduate school, correct?
Yes, I graduated with my master's in TV, radio, and film this past May.
And what has this internship been like?
Man, this internship has been a crazy experience. I was here when the assassination on Trump happened, when President Biden dropped out of the race. So much has been going on while I've been here. And
crazy.
And it's the best time to be at Fox News during this period and with the election coming up. It's been a fantastic experience working with you, with Allison, Eric, Pete. So I've had so much fun here, and I can't wait for what's going to happen next.
Right. So now, Justin, you need a job, right? Now you got to
get
hired.
Yeah, I need a job.
Get,
Brian,
get
please
paid
help
a lot
me.
More money.
Yes, help me, Brian, please.
What do you like, radio, TV, film?
I'm more
anything?
Radio, but TV is always in the back of my mind, so maybe I'll end up on TV someday.
Well, this is a big broadcasting mall. There's nothing you can't do. Film,
everything. You name it, I'm there. Leave.
Hopefully, you'll stay in the building. Justin, you did a great job. Thanks again.
Yes, thank you.
Syracuse has another reason to feel proud. It's not just about Marv Albin and Bob Costas anymore.
Or your son.
Oh, yeah.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Oh, it's going to end. The honeymoon period's going to end. Look, she's got a little period. She's got a convention coming up. It's about policy. It's not about her. I think she's incompetent because I've watched her. She destroyed California. She destroyed San Francisco. Everything she's touched has turned to bad things. I'm not going to use foul language, but everything she's touched has turned bad.
Remember, they were going to do election integrity, attack Trump. Didn't work. She was going to be the border czar. First she admitted she was, then she wasn't. Now she is again and said she was good on the border. And see how things have gone, how the numbers have gone down. And then you see that she hasn't done anything. I mean, if you walk up to her at any moment and talk about any policy, she has no answer. And that's where we have all these montages of a woman just melting down every time she's asked a question off the cuff. And so their answer is, put her on the prompter and don't let anyone talk to her. But Bill McGurn writes the debates should happen, and now they will happen at least one September 10th on ABC. We hope to get one on Fox, and the president wants one on NBC, too. Bill McGurn joins us now from the for the Wall Street Journal. In fact, he's going to be with us shortly. He joins us from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and he writes today about Kamala Harris and Trump. Mr. Trump, do not miss an opportunity to debate her. The one thing I did do is look back at on YouTube. The reason why people wanted her to run for president is because of the way she was grilling the Supreme Court justices and the nominees for President Trump. You have to see her go after General Kelly. And because she has all the power and she can cut you off, because you're a nominee and you're an expert witness, as soon as they went to answer, she just cut them off. She was being unbelievably, I think, rude and disrespectful. And then when you're Kavanaugh and you try to get confirmed, you don't answer a question, she keeps jumping on you. She looks tough. But when you put her in unscripted debate about politics, because she doesn't study anything, she can't retain any staff, her whole campaign collapsed. In fact, one of the people when they left, and I'll paraphrase what they said, when she fell apart in 2020 before Iowa, even though she had an apartment in Iowa, she had an office in Iowa, she basically moved in there. When everything fell apart, this campaign worker says, I've worked on three separate campaigns. This campaign had no mission, had no strategy, and no plan to do anything if we indeed win. But I give President Trump credit yesterday. He was talking about the debates and his willingness to do it, and he'll do it. Cut three.
We'd like to do three debates. We think we should do three debates. We think Fox and ABC, and we also have CBS is going to do the vice presidential debate. So CBS will do vice presidential, And I have to tell you, J.D. Vance has really stepped up. He's doing a fantastic job.
I agree. Don't let anyone tell you different. Make up your own mind. If you don't want to listen to me make up your own opinion, I'm fine with that. I encourage it. But just don't let people tell you that he's struggling, that he is has no answers, has no publicity. They want to replace him. Nobody wants to replace him. I talk to Trump people all day and night. And some of the Trump people don't get along just like in any staff. Nobody wants to replace J.D. Vance. So if you watch him do the press conferences, you know he's going to kill Tim Walz. He's going to memorize Tim Walz's background, and he's going to destroy him. Why? Because Tim Walz is a progressive. He says he's a progressive. The American people don't want a progressive. They want a center-right candidate. That's the winner. She's not even. You can't even pretend that he's got a center-right background. Now, I thought that it was interesting when we were talking about politics. When you have every time I see Peggy Noonan, I tend to want to read her column. And I just know that she's got a little bit of Trump derangement syndrome. But she's so smart and such a fantastic writer. She happens to be from where I'm from, Massapequa. She had moved out long before I was even in high school. But she wrote for Reagan, wrote for Bush, obviously. She says, what does it mean? This is the theme. What does it mean that she chose Kamala Harris? Tim Walz says, I believe this means she's not going to broad but deep. She doesn't intend to win this by going an inch to the right, but through the left-wing turnout, the young minorities, those who haven't steadily voted in the past, if ever. She's giving them a jolt, a straight shot of progressive. The future is left-wing, getting them to show up as the strategy. Centrists and Trump-rejecting Republicans aren't their concern. That's so dumb, by the way. If they can be won over through small symbolic or stylistic moves, fine. Everyone's welcome, but they're not a focus. Getting out our people is the focus. And that's when you pick somebody who's more left-wing than you. What bothers me most is they don't want to admit it. I mean, you talk to Republicans, they'll tell you who's conservative. Is Matt Gaetz conservative? Yes. Is there a moderate out there? Larry Hogan. Are they hiding it? No. You know exactly where they stand. She went on to say a few weeks ago, I said she'd shown no sign of wanting to go to the center and may, in fact, think this is at the same time for a, this is the same time for a battle between the rightist and leftist policies. Seems to me that's what she's doing. And this is where I'll challenge Peggy Noonan. Through her staff, she changed her positions to seem moderate. Through her selection, she knows she's a progressive. In her being, in her background, she's a progressive. She's a liberal. She sees these programs don't work, so she knows she can't talk about them. It doesn't mean she doesn't like it. Remember, some of the things that you should keep in mind always. In 2018, she voted to end the U.S. involvement with the Saudi-led air campaign against Yemen, against the Houthi rebels. She put it this way in a tweet. The Houthis and Saudis are fighting are now targeting commercial ships in the Red Sea. She said this hasn't aged well. Now we know the Houthi rebels. We all do. Why? Because they've shut down two waterways in the Middle East, including the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. That these are a bunch of terrorists and moccasins. The Saudis knew they were a problem. As bad as the Saudis can be and as flawed as their royal family is, they are still a better ally than Iran. They're still somebody we can count on who will have no interest in making an enemy of Israel. Believe me, they have no interest in it. It doesn't behoove them. It's not what their population is taught anymore. It's done. And her instincts are Saudi Arabia. And by the way, Joe Biden's is they're the pariah nation. Harrison 2019 co-sponsored the Green New Deal and its promise of a federal jobs guarantee. Are you okay with our government giving everybody a job? Because do you know how they're being paid? Tax dollars. She came out for confiscating guns through a mandatory buyback program. This is what I'm talking about. Mandatory. But now she says she's not going to do that anymore. She didn't say that. Her staff said it. She vowed to in a primary town hall to eliminate private insurance. She also said that with Jake Tapper. She told voters there's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking, detailing her day one priority of eliminating on public lands as well as ending offshore drilling. That's what she said. So in a way, she's saying I stake to the left wing. But if she was staked to those positions, I would think Peggy Noonan was right. But she's changed because her positions are so unpopular. But if she gets elected, nothing's going to stop her between the honeymoon period that she's going to have, the lack of press conferences or media that will challenge her from doing all those things. She says, this is a quote, should scare everybody who's in the military or cares about our defense. I unequivocally agree with the goal of reducing the defense budget. She said that to Bernie Sanders. She said she had a proposal to slash the Pentagon by 10%. That vote needs no explanation. Okay. Does this scare you at all? Do you think that we can challenge China, protect Taiwan, make sure ward off, help Japan ward off nuclear missiles from North Korea, build a missile defense, defend our country from North Korea, from Russia, from China. Do you know what the former president said? Nobody talks about it. He said, I'm not going to do tips. I'm not going to tax tips. People talk about that all the time. Then he said, when Social Security, we're not going to tax it. That's new, but it's maybe not enough. A lot of the seniors listening to me right now say, I need that stapled to inflation. So if inflation goes up, so does my Social Security. I'm not sure what that does to Social Security. I haven't done the math yet, but it's something to talk about. But he's already made a move there. The other thing he says is going to do massive missile defense. He's going to put a huge bubble over our country because this guy's instincts are to protect our country and avoid war. Nothing better than missile defense. I'm telling you, Rumsfeld talked about the same thing. Whether it's in space or on land, we need that. And then what we do is put our allies in the bubble too. And you watch how many more people want to be in the bubble and how isolated Iran, North Korea, China, and Russia will be. China will be the toughest, but let them know we're into it. And the other thing is, when Tim Walz, no one talks about this, his ability, his push to end strip mining, they have a 20-year ban on strip mining in Minnesota. Why is it important? Because I believe that they have more rare earth used for batteries and all this green technology in Minnesota, but they don't want to use it because they say it's bad for the environment, even though these companies have proven they'd be environmentally conscious all the way through. Instead, we pay for other people to make batteries, many of which get their paychecks from China, if they're not from China directly. They have a lot of rare earth over there, too. So you can't have it both ways. All right, when we come back, we'll take your phone calls. I see you in Missouri. I see you in Texas. I see you in Orlando. We'll get to them in a moment and find out if there's indeed more to know.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I haven't recalibrated strategy at all. It's the same policies, open borders, weak on crime. I think she's worse than Biden because he got forced into the position. She was there long before. She destroyed San Francisco. She destroyed California as the AG.
That is a little of the hour-long press conference President Trump put together yesterday. And now tonight he's going to be in Montana helping out. He's going to help Tim Sheehy beat John Tester. I think he's about 3 points out of Sheehy. He's a really impressive guy, Navy SEAL, buttoned up, good, really good business person. Bill McGurn here, Fox News contributor, Wall Street Journal editorial board member, and former chief speechwriter for George W. Bush. Bill, you write about the need to debate, and it looks like they are going to do it September 10th. Do you sense there's going to be more than one? She will not admit it, but there's got to be more than one.
Right.
Don't you think?
I think the pressures on her do more than one. Remember, Joe Biden only agreed to the debates because he was losing in the polls, and he thought he had to do something. And he also thought, let's get him over with, right? I think keeping away from the press, she can probably get away with that. I'm not sure about the debates. And I think Donald Trump needs him more than Kamala does for a simple reason. The press is protecting her the way it protected Joe Biden by not demanding press conferences, answer questions.
It's crazy.
Not at all.
Have you ever seen this in your life?
No.
Bill Clinton and George Bush, they never would have allowed either one of them.
They would ask, and also as a Republican, it would not just be asked once. Every day would be an editorial demanding one, so forth. So the debate is Donald Trump's chance to break through this media bubble protecting her and get her to answer on her feet a tough question, which she's been able to avoid in her dealings so far.
I want you to hear, so she did walk over. There's no doubt about it, in my humble opinion, that she walked over to the gaggle yesterday because Trump had an hour presser.
Yeah, I think so.
Here's what she said. Cut 15.
President Trump had a press conference today. He talked about a lot of things. I wonder if you have a reaction to what's happening.
Well, I'm glad that he's finally agreed to a debate on September 10th. I'm looking forward to it. And Hope he shows up.
Are you open to more debate?
I am happy to have that conversation about an additional debate for after September 10th, for sure.
He provoked two more debates.
Like I said, happy to have that conversation.
So, and then she went on to say, I'm going to talk to my people about doing one interview before Labor Day, before the end of the month. One interview? Really?
Right. It's working.
With Rachel Maddow?
Yeah, it's working for her. Why wouldn't she change? That's why the debates are so important. Look, in general, I think debates are important because Americans can see, without much in the way of filter, how candidates respond to each other, to tough questions, to being on the spot. Especially important for Kamala Harris, who didn't go through the primary. So we didn't see any of this before. So I think they both owe it to the country. I would hope that there's more. Now she's again on the back foot because he wants to do two more, right? And she just wants it, so far it's committed only to this one. She always says she's happy to have the conversation, but you never know what that means.
So you have a situation where somebody not only is, do we know a little about them, they want to change their positions without explaining it.
Right.
And not even saying it. In her speeches, she's not saying, I am for fracking. I'm for offshore drilling. I am for criminalizing border crossings. I don't know. I want to double the defense budget. It would be different if she was saying that. Then I would like to know why. And should we believe you? But now we just have her staffer saying it.
Right.
So all I have is her past statements saying the opposite of what I said. And we have the staff leak, unnamed staff members leaking that she changed her mind.
Yeah. And also then it really raises the question, what are you supposed to believe? That she didn't mean these things before, or she gave them up so easily? Basically, it's anything that could get her in trouble, like fracking, you know, with the Democratic base, with ordinary Americans. He wants to present a more moderate image. Joe Biden had an advantage with the Scranton background. He had Bernie's agenda in Biden clothing, and it looked more moderate. His demeanor, he talked in the way of a traditional Democrat. She doesn't have that luxury. She is a San Francisco progressive. The question is, can Trump show that to the American people in the debate? And I think if he's disciplined the way he was in the Joe Biden debate, I think he'll do very well.
I think Tim Walz is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I think the more you get exposed to him, they like his demeanor. They want to make him a football coach. Number one, he wasn't the coach. He was assistant coach. Number two, he wasn't a command sergeant major. He was a sergeant major.
Right.
Number two, he might have been, they say he's a moderate congressman. Nobody thinks he's a moderate governor.
Right.
And then we find out that one of these Muslim imams that basically called for supporting Hitler and was for the October 7th attacks has been a constant since 2022 in and around Tim Walz.
Yeah, I think also—
That's the Washington Times wrote that.
I think people get tired of a folksy demeanor after a while if they think it's phony. You know, it's only his shirts and so forth that are moderate, you know, not his actual positions. So I'm not sure that will wear well in people. One big thing that I think he brings up, and this should have counted against him in choosing him, he puts crime back on the table. The Democrats want to campaign on January 6th against Trump. But this puts the George Floyd riots in perspective. You know, he refused to call in the National Guard when the mayor asked for help. He called it in, but much later than—
And he puts down the National Guard saying they're 19-year-old
And then
cooks.
Later, yeah, said they were cooks and so forth. So I think this really puts those riots and crime in general— back on
what
the
about
table.
The Trump phone call praising him?
That's what, look, Trump does that all the time. When you're president, you say things at the moment, you get something that you want. I'm not sure that matters. I think the images of Minneapolis, St. Paul burning and stuff is far more powerful.
Well, you and the Wall Street Journal can do a lot to help Kamala Harris just to do interviews, let alone debates.
I would love her to give an interview to me, or even you, Brian.
No, I'm either one of us. We're two cool guys.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show from Midtown Manhattan, where it's been just rainy enough to say I shouldn't go outside and walk the dogs because they get wet. It's kind of weird when you talk about your dog like they're a towel. You know, you don't talk like because you worry about what they're going to smell like, but even though they would put up with all types of conditions, so they end up running around wrecking the house. Tyrus at the bottom of the hour. Shannon Bream is here now. We have a lot going on. We have Kamala Harris, 19 days without doing an interview, answered two random questions yesterday. That'll be enough, thank you. Then she's got the DNC coming up. Shannon Bream's going to be there. And then she says, I'm talking to my people about doing a sit-down before the end of the month. Before the end of the month. Shannon Bream, you're the same Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday, right?
The one and the same.
Right. So, and we know who, let's get this out of the way, and something I look forward to.
Uh-huh.
How much, who do you have?
Wait, do you get things out of the way if you're looking forward to them?
That's true. I don't know if I can say both things.
Okay, so we're going to do a lot of foreign policy because the Middle East is not looking good. We'll see what we're going to do this week. And we've got Senator Tom Cotton with us from the other side of the aisle. We've got Congressman Jason Crow. We'll talk 2024. We'll talk Mideast policy. But then we have two economists with differing viewpoints on how we're doing, and they're going to do a panel with us, like, are things going well or not? Like, do you believe your eyes? Do you not? I don't know. We'll do that. And of course, we have our panel.
Yeah, I had Senator Tom Cotton on earlier, and I warned mm-hmm. him about you.
Well, he knows full well
what to expect.
what to expect.
And I think he might like you better. So
I don't
instead
know.
Of him saying,
I mean,
okay, tell me about Shannon Bream, I get the sense, like, back off.
Brian, this is not a contest, a popularity contest. I will say, when it comes to contests, I just did 2 hours with Bill Hemmer.
Pro.
And it was freezing. Then I come in here, and it's like sub-zero. What's with you guys?
Oh, you're talking
about
the weather?
Like running hot. No, your studio is freezing cold.
Well, it's good. It keeps your attention. Letterman used to do that. Drop it down to 55 degrees. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I didn't do the show.
The only.
Right. That's about it.
Ben, did you get invited?
No. But I did go see it twice in the audience. And I did get to interview him in college.
Did you?
Right. Yeah, it was one of the great things.
Did you give him like some career advice and send him on his way?
So I'll tell you a funny story. Ready?
Okay.
My college, Long Island University, to get a degree in communications, they said, you have to do a senior project.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what is a senior project? So when I finally get there, you get an advisor. Then my advisor gets sick.
Uh-oh.
So he disappears. So finally, I'm like, what needs to be? Just pick a topic, mm-hmm. but bring it to life. It's got to be TV or radio.
Oh.
All right.
Bring it to life.
These people, everybody in my class is like, you know, it's senior year. They're going to, who cares?
Mailing it in.
Mm-hmm. They're doing, they're writing children's, they're having fun. They're writing children's books and all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I said, screw this. I'm fascinated by late night television because I'm lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And,
hard to believe.
Right. And I said, what if I do the history of late night television in audio?
Mm-hmm.
So I found the president of late night TV that one of the people that hired Johnny Carson.
Oh, wow.
That he was in his last year before he retired. His name is, I think, Wettick, his last name was. And then I got a phone interview with Jack Parr.
Wow.
Right, from Connecticut. And then I was interning at NBC, and I was basically stalking David Letterman until...
Mm. Like by legal definition or...
Mm, I would just go watch his rehearsals. And I would just sit there as if I belonged. They figured uh-huh. if you had a pass...
Right, you're good.
I was good. So then finally I walked up to him. I waited for him. He got mad one day because the rehearsal was going bad.
One day.
He storms out. And I follow him in. And I introduce myself.
You thought that was a good time to introduce yourself to a superstar late night host?
I was. I'm not as savvy as I am now. So he goes, where are you from? He's like, just slow down. I was like, where are you from? I tell him. And I got this radio show. I was wondering if I can interview you for him. And I also like to do a senior project. He goes, project? How would you, like, what are you, in eighth grade? What's mm-hmm, a project?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Made fun of me. And then he said, yeah, call my assistant. I'm like, okay, I did. And finally I got through and I did it. Mm-hmm. I handed in.
Mm-hmm.
And to get a magna cum laude, I need to get an A.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everyone's getting an A for children's books.
Mm-hmm.
I get a B+.
What?
My advisor gets sick. So my advisor was the guy that advised
me.
So I finally, nobody's left at school. I'm trying to find out who gave me a B+.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I find this guy. He's wearing a silk shirt with a T-shirt underneath it with a huge gut. And this shirt was way too small.
What does that have to do with anything?
I'll never forget it.
A silk shirt and the huge gut.
So I just said, I just killed myself to do this mm-hmm. project. I get an A. He goes, well, why do you need an A? I go, well, I want to get my degree. He goes, you'll find out in life that doesn't matter.
Oh, no.
And then he says, it's worse. Then he said, who did you get to do Letterman's voice?
What? So that no wonder you got a B+. He didn't even think you did it for real.
So I told him, I did. He goes, well, you took it from a show. I go, no, I did it. I did the interview. He goes, you didn't do the interview. I go, I interned at NBC. I did the interview. He goes, well, whatever.
Well, whatever. Did that not get you an A?
No.
So you didn't graduate with honors like me?
I just got cum louder. And what did you get? What did you get, Magna cum louder?
I got Magna. I missed Summa by like 8/10 of a point from a professor who totally gave me the shaft. This similar story. I went to him after this final. It was my philosophy class, which clearly I'm not smart. I hate that kind of stuff. Like, to me, it's
black and
white.
If you have a good philosophy teacher, it's great.
Okay, but I didn't. And I will not tell you, like, you gave me the silk shirt with the gut. I could say some things about this guy, but I won't because I'm going to take the high road. I had a B in the class, right? I wanted to get it up to an A. And he said, well, you don't have to take the final, but if you want to try to take the final, you can try to boost yourself up to an A, because it was one of the only B's I got in college. I was very upset. So I study. I take the final and he gave me a C. He took my grade down instead of taking it up. I'm like, I didn't even need to take this final. I could have had a B. So I go to him and I'm very upset. And he's like, stop talking. And I said, listen, you're killing me here. And he goes, oh, let me guess, you've got a 4.0. And I'm like, well, not after this class, I don't. And he was like, life, this is how life works. See yourself out. And so, very similar story. But look, I think we turned out okay.
Well, Shannon, I just can't wait for those calls. Is Miss Bream there? Yes. Shannon, go ahead. Hi, this is my college. Being in. I would like to get some money from you. I see you're very successful. I like to
bolster up the library. Is Professor Sowensil still working there?
And the answer is?
And then I will be like, it's a no for me, doll.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Yeah. You say you'll learn that in life.
Right. You learn you don't always get what you ask for.
Like, you get what you need.
Yeah, I've heard some philosopher who I did not study in my class said that.
Mick Jagger and Socrates, very similar.
Socrates,
right. Mm-hmm. Socrates didn't write anything down. Mm-hmm. Plato was so smart, he wrote down everything Socrates did.
That's
why everyone thinks Plato's exactly. So smart. He was smart enough. And by the way, how smart could he be if he killed himself? Didn't he drink hemlock?
I don't Socrates. Know. I got all these people. I've got like a blocked out my memory of all my philosophers because it was such a bad class.
So it was just kind of interesting. It was kind of political science. The way I understand it, Socrates trained Plato. Plato trained Aristotle. Mm-hmm. Aristotle had this student called Alexander the Great. Mm-hmm. He really was a quick learner and mm-hmm. then kind of misinterpreted some of the axioms and decided to take over the world.
He took it on the road.
Right.
He decided, let's take this out for a spin.
All right.
Have you written a book about any of those people?
No.
Okay, but see, that's on your list now.
Absolutely.
Are you just sticking to like American history?
Like, I can never plagiarize Socrates because never written anything down.
Yeah, exactly.
My word against
for
Socrates.
All you know. Well, you get in that Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure time machine.
Yes.
And then we can take it head to head with Socrates.
Absolutely. All right.
I feel like that's not what you called me to come talk on the show about.
Of this. None of it. But it was good. I feel it's therapeutic cathartic.
Could I be your your therapist? Really, I don't have a degree in that, but if it will make you feel better.
It bothers me to this day.
Well, me too. Clearly, I'm so mad about my philosophy professor from college.
So the biggest story, everything is unprecedented. I get so many shows you can go, we never had this happen before. It's happening again. We're having a candidate that never got a single vote, that did terrible in 2020 by all accounts, by our own accounts, who is now, without going through the primary process, wants to run through the tape without telling us at all what they stand for. Even the website is blank, Shannon.
Mm-hmm. It is weird. There are no policy positions.
But it's actually not acceptable. Don't you think the American people have standards at some point? Something has to change?
But remember, voting starts early, like in a month. I mean, people are going to start casting ballots. I think very much if you have, as a candidate, worries about how some of your positions may be received by middle America, you just run things out. Like you said, you just run out the clock. And I think the media is going to have to be much more aggressive about pushing for no, we have questions, we expect you to sit down. Otherwise, the debate may be the only thing that we get where we get some contrast.
So it would bother anybody, I think, if you're following somebody around, whether you're in the past, whether it's Bill Clinton or George Bush, whether it's
D or R. You know,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
You gotta sit down.
So here's what I haven't heard this yet, but I wanted to pull some from the other channels. Here's the CNN panel on Harris not taking questions. Cut 20.
Look, she's going to take questions. We're going to make sure of that. But, you know, there's been a bit of a honeymoon period. I think she's giving Tim Walz a moment. But he did make that contrast, I think, really clear. The rest of it was such a waste of time and a wasted opportunity to talk policy to voters.
Let me just also say this. Like, don't nobody care but us. About somebody taking
true.
Questions. No, that is
no,
very
I,
true.
No, I speak to blue state voters all the time. But they have questions. They want answers.
No. But yes, they have questions. They want answers. But you know what doesn't have to happen? Audie doesn't have to ask those questions.
Yes, Audie political, does have
no,
to ask
she does
those
not.
Questions.
Political does not.
Because
political,
when fans ask them, Bakari,
that's not,
when
we're not
friends
talking,
ask them,
we're not,
when surrogates ask them, they're
is,
not getting the real
so,
answer.
This is so,
that's why Audie needs to ask
this is so in the beltway.
No, it really isn't.
Shannon,
that's such an inside the beltway thing to say, by the way, that the idea of asking questions is inside the beltway.
It's stunning. And you know who else? Jeff Saligny. I've never met him, but you know, he's the one who says, how are you enraptured by The Office to Barack Obama, remember? Mm-hmm.
Was that the leg tingling thing?
Yeah, no, this is...
That was separate. No, yeah, that was Chris Matthews.
That was Chris Matthews.
Leg tingling.
So what's enraptured? So he said, the only people that really want those questions answered are the press. That's press. What mm-mm. are you talking about? Mm-mm. Because it would be different if John McCain was running for office and he had to get this office in 60 days. You kind of know where John McCain stands. I mean, obviously, she's on the record, too. I'm reading... Charlie Spearing did a book about him. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read the whole thing. He doesn't put opinion. He really refreshes my memory on the quotes. Do you remember how aggressively she supported those accusers of mm-hmm. harassment
of
Joe Biden? And mm-hmm. you remember, of course, the segregation conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no wonder the Bidens are still mad at him. But as I just made a quick list here, she unequivocally said, I agree that the goal is to reduce the defense budget. I think we need to know. She supported the end of the Saudi air campaign against the Houthi rebels. I'm pretty sure that doesn't age well. The forcible buyback of your weapons, the reimagining ICE, the co-sponsoring the new Green Deal. If she changed her positions, we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are we going to do if she never answers that?
Well, and the thing is, like, okay, fracking, for one example, especially in somewhere as important as Pennsylvania, where that is a big issue. Well, now she said she absolutely would ban it. And now she says no. So was there an evolution? Let's hear it. Like, what was her evolution on that particular subject?
I'm sure you're aware. Do you know there's a pause on all new leases in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
in the country,
mm-hmm.
but Pennsylvania's affected?
Josh Shapiro, it's a big deal there.
Yeah, I think it might have been on, it was on one of the Sunday shows where Josh Shapiro goes, yeah, we got to lift. He didn't want to say anything negative because we have to lift the pause. If it stays on too much longer, it's going to hurt everybody, mm-hmm. like Casey helped McCormick.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you doing it?
Right.
And then when he was asked by Speaker Johnson, why are you doing this? He says, it's only a proposal. He says, no, you
right.
did it.
Right, right.
I mean, this is crazy. It's like we don't have a president and the person who's a part of it, who could change this, is now running, not wanting to be asked about this.
Well, and we need to know on any number of issues. The Wall Street Journal editorial board piece today, I'm sure that you have talked about, which is she's kind of a mystery. Like, we don't know where she is on all these really big issues, where she's either had conflicting positions or we just don't know. When you're talking about the defense budget, when you're talking about Israel, China, Taiwan, Ukraine, all of these things, if she's going to be commander-in-chief, those are questions she should have to answer. And I don't think it's only the press who wants to know. I think voters are owed that.
I have a theory.
That's
and
right.
I think it's less sensational of what's already happened. That's Nancy Pelosi leading an insurrection to knife and kick and stab Joe Biden, kick him to the curb and get rid of him. This is less. If she starts falling behind, if Trump starts doing his rallies and being effective and she has anything less than a fantastic debate, she becomes president and people get to see her riding an Air Force One. Joe Biden says, listen, I think it's in the best interest of the country. I'm not feeling great these days. I don't really feel I have the energy. I want people to see you in this spot.
Mm-hmm.
I see that happening in the fall.
Well, and today, I'm trying to remember, I think it was Wall Street Journal also, report was crossing the wires during the show when I was on with Hemmer, talking about that the president is putting her in charge of post-Gaza, like the reconciliation or reconstruction or whatever is going to happen there in the Middle East. So that came across as alert an hour or two ago. And the question is, okay, she now operating as the commander-in-chief. She's now negotiating what's going to happen with Israel and Gaza and that whole region when the war is over. I mean, that sounds like you're conceding, you know, that she's running the country
well,
now.
You
I'm
just
not
gave
sure.
me, this is why you're good at news. You just gave me somebody I did not know. By the way, you know, people say, oh, the border's a loser issue. I never thought that way. But so is that issue. That's mm-hmm. a loser issue.
That's
if you're looking
one.
For an easy win.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy win, especially when you hate the prime minister, and we know it. He knows it. You didn't show up for his
bipartisan.
Well,
and you're entertaining an arms embargo, and then your staff is having to walk that back. Does she have that position? Again, we just need to know, what is your position, and then let's talk about it.
Does she even know the Philadelphia line there?
Hmm?
The Philadelphia line that divides the Egypt from the Gaza Strip?
Yeah.
Does she know that they want to demilitarize it, that they're going to keep permanent troops there?
There's a lot to know.
There's a lot to know. Shannon, we're going to watch you Fox News Sunday.
Yeah, before that, I'll be doing The Five today. I'll also be doing Gutfeld.
Are you kidding me?
And then you have a show Saturday night, which we're all going to watch, and then come visit me on Sunday.
Yeah, Tyrus is going to be on, and we're going to have Kaylee on. We're going to have Tulsi on, and we're going to have...
I like how you have all these one-name people.
Oh,
is
John
it
gonna, Taffer.
Is, like, is John Taffer. Madonna? is going to be on there too. It's all of a
Tulsi,
single name.
You know I'm talking about?
Cher's on. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, Cher, Mazana, and Tulsi.
I'll see you then.
All right, Shannon. Sorry about the whole Suma thing.
You too. Magna for you.
Back in a moment.
The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Is it salvageable for you to be able to repair the relationship with Governor Kemp?
I don't know if I can or not. I got him elected. Without me, he wouldn't be governor. I got him elected. He was doing terribly. I got him elected. With that being said, I hope we can repair it. But if we don't, the people are still the people, and they're going to vote. We're leading in Georgia by a lot.
No, not by a lot. It really closed down. But they are making progress in their relationship. Hopefully these two will bury the hatchet, because Governor Kemp, for his own sake, he could be a legitimate 2028 candidate. You don't need Trump people against you. And you've done a great job in Georgia. So, and you have a unique philosophy, and you beat Stacey Abrams, their up-and-coming star. And I just do believe these two can come together. And what happens with Trump, when you go against him and he was your friend, he's vicious. He's more vicious than he is against his opponent, because he hates when people show disloyalty. Whether you think it's right or not, it doesn't matter. So my sense is, in listening to Lindsey Graham last night, there'll be somewhat of a coming together soon. In fact, here's what Lindsey Graham said on Sean Hannity last night about this. Do you have it, Eric?
Governor Kemp really laid it right out on the line. He said, listen, Georgia can't stand 4 more years of this. And Harris will be worse than Biden, believe it or not. People in Georgia are suffering. And Governor Kemp told everybody in that room, looked us all in the eye and said, listen, I am all in for Donald Trump. I'm going to turn on my political machine to make sure he wins Georgia. And we all know when we win Georgia, we're well on our way to 270. And if we lose Georgia, it'd be a long night.
So Lindsey Graham is not exaggerating. I've heard that from another person that was in that room. He said, I'll do it. Once Governor Kemp, I think if these guys can get in a room and just talk it out, and whatever it is, nobody wants to talk about 2020, especially people that are involved in it, and there's litigation around it, obviously. So nobody wants to talk about that. Just put it behind it. What does it take to win Georgia? Bottom line is, most of the president's beliefs, his agenda, is Georgia's agenda. It is not a red state. It's a purple state. It leans red. Governor Kemp won by a lot. The both Senate seats were won by a little. So president could bring it back in, especially with the Georgia reform on the voting, which was brilliant. Raffensperger is a good guy. So whatever happens, I think that if they're going to be successful, it's going to be together. If they don't heal their ways, Trump will lose Georgia.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Can I read you one thing that was in the New York Times that I just find so hilarious? So all this coverage of her is so fawning about her cooking and her going to restaurants. So this is from the New York Times story about the buddy-buddy relationship between her and the vice president. Ms. Harris, a black woman in the unrelenting spotlight of national politics, wears broad-shouldered suits, pearls, and heels, sometimes crisp chucks. She marshals an arched brow, a studied hand flip, carefully curated sentences. Her wave is controlled, her eyes always fixed on a distant point, her movements smooth. That's like from a poetry contest sponsored by the DNC about why do you love Vice President Harris. That's in the New York Times. They have never written a paragraph like that about Donald Trump.
Mark Halperin just put a state in the obvious. That is so over-the-top reporting. It's not a column. It's a column. I go, okay, some liberal reporter just loves her or a family member. But that is a reporter telling us what they have observed. Tyrus is with us right now. Tyrus, I wanted you to hear that because Mark Halperin's pretty, even though he's had some problems in the office, he's a very respected political insider. He couldn't stomach what the New York Times did.
No, that was a love novel.
Come on.
That was like one of those love novels that your mom reads on the weekends, and you're like, what's this? Don't touch that.
Right. This is a woman they couldn't say anything nice about prior.
No.
Or much.
They're doing their best. This is the campaign. the campaign is, and this is what worked for Biden during the pandemic. So this is their blueprint. She goes away, and they just have everyone who they think of substance fawning over her. And it's just kind of the thing, like they're trying to create a word of mouth without actually any words coming out of the mouth. So it's clever for them because they're assuming while she's doing this, Trump's going to say something. Then they can respond to the whether it's a identity politics or gender or whatever. So that's what this is. It's a feelings facts campaign.
My thing is, my analogy is they put her on a pedestal and then they put bubble wrap around her and they have no interest in taking the bubble wrap off when they should be reporting on the at least reporting on the statue. But they're not even reporting on it. And there's no push to have her sit down. What do you think? But on a separate note, what do you think of Tim Walz and the look at his service?
See, this is one of those things where I would step back and let people who served speak to this because from what – because you hear both sides of it, right, where – but the fact that he was still using those – that title, saying that he was a sergeant when he wasn't, I think everyone should have a problem with that. I think there's a difference between misrepresentation – but when you look at his speeches, he's doing what every BS guy in a bar does who has a camouflage jacket. But you can embellish as a citizen. But when you are representing and you're going to be a leader and you're going to use as a part of that thing to make us want to vote for you is that you were a military leader who led his men, as he described. But he wasn't. So, I mean, that's an issue. And if he's lying about – and that's the best part about him. That's the problem with him. All we know about him is that he likes to mold butter, not fashionable. I think we can all say that. Turns out he didn't do that either. And he claims that he's a sportsman because he goes ice fishing. And let me tell you, as a retired athlete, ice fishing is right above watching paint peel in terms of an athletic thing. You sit in a box alone, contemplate your life. Usually the marriage is on the rocks a little bit. You need it. You're trying to escape from the world. Job isn't great. And you drop a tiny line. You can't even cast. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you drop.
You just drop. Maybe a little jingle, maybe. Mm-hmm. But that's it. That's it. Grumpy old men. Green Hornet.
Allison, Patrick O'Rourke, our mutual friend, has a line. He says, how much do you hate your family if you go out and ice fish?
Exactly.
There's a whole thing.
Because worst case, you drowned.
Right. So listen to David Bellavia, a Medal of Honor recipient last night. I wanted to get his take for a guy. And that knows, understand these ranks and why Command Master Sergeant matters. Cut 29.
And again, I just find the whole thing disingenuous. Hold a press conference, explain what the record is. Your failure to do so, to me, speaks volumes. We have an oath and a creed, an NCO creed. We will not use our grade or position for pleasure, profit, or personal safety. That is a part of every creed a non-commissioned officer recites. That's our blood oath. That's what we swear to do. It's hard to say unless, of course, a seat opens up in the first district in Minnesota, and then you're on your own.
He goes on. Cut 28.
This is supposed to be a platform to lecture us that the foreign policy of the way we left Afghanistan is okay. We're supposed to forget that 7 American soldiers were just hurt by Katyusha rockets in El Asad Air Base. Well, that's really fascinating because El Asad seems to be in Iraq and we're not in Iraq anymore. So why don't we have the Bagram Air Base? These are the questions that Governor Walz is going to use and say, as 24 years as a command sergeant major, I have subject matter expertise. You are losing the ability to have that subject matter expertise and to lecture us.
I think that's a rational explanation. Don't tell me you're an expert because we look at your actions.
Well, I think what and listening to what he says, I think I got a better understanding of what the connection was with Kamala and Walz is that they share in this progressive administration is they share the same integrity. If you look at how he handles things, how he describes things, very similar.
Yeah.
Our Afghanistan pullout, very similar to Mr. Walz. You know, it just he fits the role. I think what we're having a hard time with here is that we haven't known who's been running the government for the last 3.5 years. We've had some guesses.
Now we don't know at all.
Well,
no one's even there.
Well, I think what we're starting to see is the beginning of the they'll have a little civil war because, you know, everyone makes deals. And then Biden had the debate and the whole thing was blown up. And so then Kamala was able to make her move. But that doesn't mean the other side is good with it. I don't think Dr. Jill is just going to just let that power go.
You think they got another shot?
I think it's going to be – I think we're going to start – they're going to make – they're going to try to blame all the failures on Biden. So this is going to turn ugly. This is – you know, because even the way that it went down – I was on Gutfield the other night and I said to Greg, I feel like the Democrats saw us coming and that we did their work for them. They wanted Biden out. They couldn't find the right way to do it by having him go to that debate early.
But you realize we didn't waste. Do it. They did it.
No, but Trump murdered him. I mean, he after the debate, it was over. 50-year career over. One-round knockout. Tyson Spinks got nothing on that debate. But as soon as then they had the grounds to say he's got to go. Then Nancy comes in and goes, we can do it your way or we can do it my way. They made him an offer he couldn't refuse. None of this happens if that debate doesn't happen. If we would have stuck with what traditional debating was, which was after everyone's name, because even waiting for President Trump to announce his VP pick and then they could take time, all that stuff would have been in October. There'd have been no time.
Yeah.
For any of this.
So Anita Dunn, who now left, used to be the longtime confidant whose idea was, she says, it's crazy to think that we set him up to fail. We thought they would get him back in. We knew he was trailing in every battleground state. We thought that would get him back in. But obviously the Bidens agree with you because she's gone. She was blamed.
Yes.
And they went through the drills at Camp David. And clearly he must have sucked.
Yes.
And they still put him out there.
Yeah, because this is how we get him out.
Yeah, it's not like, well, he was great in rehearsal. Nobody has said that.
No, they didn't. From what I understand, it wasn't much of anything.
Yeah.
He napped. He had lunch. They went over a couple of things. It was very blasé fare, as sophisticated people would say. And I think that was by design.
So I've said this before. I read it a couple of times. I'll just paraphrase it. Peggy Noonan is an anti-Trumper, but a conservative columnist who was a speechwriter for Reagan and Bush. So she writes to the Wall Street Journal today that Tim Walz's pick is this. It is saying that we will win on Democrat votes alone.
Yeah.
And we're going to get the people that usually sit out to vote. That'll be enough. If you want to come along as an anti-Trumper, you can. But we're not even looking for you. Shapiro would have brought people. Kelly would have brought
Shapiro
people.
Shapiro was too much of a threat.
Obviously. For an insecure person. I'd love a great number 10.
Bernie Sanders administration, what this is.
Too much of a threat to the
to them.
To the socialists.
Might not play ball. They found someone who falls in line perfectly. They've worked together. They work together well in Minnesota.
But it's a risk. But I think it's a huge risk.
I think they believe, because it's across – it's the blueprint that Biden won with. It's people – it's Trump versus Trump. All we have to do is stand on the sideline, smile, be appalled when he calls us a name. And whenever they get him to say something like the whole thing, talking about her skin tone and whether she's black or not, stupid. Waste of time. No win. No Republican should touch that. The color of her skin is irrelevant. It's her character that we have an issue with. It's her incompetence we have an issue with. Doesn't matter what color she is. But if you spend a whole week talking on that, we're not talking about inflation. We're not talking about the border.
Here's what Ryan Priebus said, and I think we both agree on this. Last night, what he's noticed so far. Cut 31.
The strategy of Harris is to do nothing and let the media recreate this Barack Obama-style election. And you talked about diving and ducking, and it's like dodgeball. But, you can get pretty far in dodgeball as long as you don't get hit. So if you don't get hit, you can keep going. And that's why I think we got to go back to the basics, which is what brought Trump here in the first place before that first debate, which is what? It was inflation. It was the economy. It was the border. And Donald Trump said it so many times during the debate. It's gas, groceries, and the things that are affecting the family.
But I think that Trump gets the applause lines because you do it. You're on stand-up all the time.
Yeah.
It gets applause lines. And the applause lines is she's dumb. She's not that smart, low IQ. That's when people, but you can't respond to the applause.
No, you can't.
Just nail it. Know what I would do is 15.
Calling her dumb and things like that may be true. That may be an observation, right? But the other side of it is people just hear the insult without the context. She's clearly not a dumb person. She wouldn't be where she was today if she was ignorant, right?
Well, I don't think anyone's dumb at this point. No, it's how much work you put in.
We're all dumb in something. I'm ignorant as hell in equestrian horse finances. I found that out this weekend. So, you're a genius in one thing or another. But I think when you do that, given President Trump's track record, That's all the media runs off of. They need those. If he doesn't give them those, if he's like, you know what, she might be the greatest person in the world, but she's a horrible, as far as record, stick to record, talk about the things you're doing. You can imply she's dumb or that the administration's thought process is dumb or whatever by the difference between your stuff that works and their stuff that doesn't and the stuff that's just makes zero sense, like tampons for
now that they committed to September, you got to go back to she's a really good debater. We know that she's a prosecutor. That's all they do. Now you got to start building her up.
Well,
it doesn't work.
I don't know. Tulsi Gabbard kind of put a – I don't know about that debate thing. Here's the thing about the difference between being a prosecutor. When a prosecutor, no one's allowed else to speak or call them out. They get to finish.
But you know how to sell fights, right?
Yeah, you can sell
fights by going, yeah, I don't really have a shot. The hand speed's so great. He's got a great chin. It doesn't matter. You know, this is the best. Remember Lou Holtz used to do that in Notre Dame?
But those
Holtz were, like, oh,
but they had the reputation. It was Notre Dame. They were beasts. You know, no, Alabama says, oh, I don't know. LSU's coming. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're like, okay. But we really don't know. If Tim Walz and her, and that's her thing, where they're like, well, we don't know what we're going to do. I don't think that's their thing. Their thing's, let's fight. Let's go. They want the fight. That's why they're like saying to my face, President Trump.
A few more minutes with Tyrus. But I do have to tell you, his tour is still in gear, and it's going to kick it again in the fall. What it is, comedy tour, September 12th and 13th at Corvallis, Oregon. Back-to-back in Idaho, September 14th and 15th. The 18th in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Go to Linktree. But there's a period in between there? Or is that
It's at linktree.com. Okay. Just click it. It goes right to me.
/TyrusMash for tickets, right?
Yep.
Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
All right, welcome back. Tyrus, you're going to do more to know with me. Is that okay?
Yo, let's go.
All right, and by the way, you're going to be on One Nation Saturday night, 9 o'clock.
Yes, I got the travel.
All right, fantastic. Meanwhile, all right, we begin. Are you smarter than a celebrity? Do you think that's a good premise for a game show?
Yeah, should be an easy one. You could have five-year-olds on.
The new series hosted by NFL star Travis Kelce will premiere. Is he going to do anything on the field? October 16th on Prime Video for 3 episodes, followed by 1 new episode weekly. I know, are smarter than a third grader or a sixth grader? That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Right. What do you think? Does he have a good TV personality?
His brother does. So right. I'm assuming it's got to be close. You know, I mean, like I said, I've hated him because he's a Chiefs player and he's a Hall of Famer. For sure. But that crossover he needs to do stuff. That means he might retire sooner. So a Patriots fan, yeah, Kelce, do that TV show. You should, bro.
Next, return of the mask. Multiple counties in blue state California urge N95 masks in grocery stores and restaurants despite COVID cases leveling off. Do you believe that they're going to try to do this again in California?
Yeah, well, that's why there's that new song, All My Exes Live in California, because I ain't never going back.
And how about this? That's when all the robberies are happening, all the burglaries are happening. These people are covering their faces.
Like I said, California, I grew up there. You can have it. Not going back.
All right, OpenAI next. OpenAI warns people might become emotionally reliant on its chatbot voice mode.
Too late.
The company revealed the latest technology during a demo in May. It can translate between two speakers during a real-time conversation to detect humans' emotions based on a selfie they took. So you do not have to speak to human beings. You can speak to your chatbot instead of your spouse, your friend, your kids.
There's a great movie called Her. Check it out. It explains it all.
Really?
Yeah. Everyone becomes in love with their little voice in their earbud. People don't even talk anymore. And it's already happening. People care more about their social media than their actual real relationships.
Next, Joe Rogan says he supports RFK Jr. over Trump and Harris. Quote, that's just what they just do politics. They gaslight. They manipulate you. He's the only one that makes sense to me. He's the only one who doesn't attack people. He attacks actions and ideas, but he's much more reasonable, intelligent. I mean, the guy was an environmental lawyer and he cleaned up the East River. He's a legitimate guy. What do you think?
I was with, I didn't have a problem with Jr. until the bear roadkill story, and I'm good.
He's going up falconing.
Yes, he went from falconing.
He claims to find a dead bear.
Which could happen. He keeps roadkill in his freezer at any time. And listen, I'm
he put
all
the bear
recycling
in his trunk and went back to Central Park.
Yes, but he couldn't because it sat for too long, so then he had to dump it. Again, the story was so long and not necessary. That's when you keep. That's when you keep. So you know what? He might be those things, Joe. But for me, I'm good. I can't get behind a bad storyteller. I just can't. You know what I'm saying? I can't.
Eats dogs.
Can't. Yeah, you know.
Brain worms.
Listen. That parasite, like Kennedy said. Where do you think the parasite in your brain came from if you're eating roadkill on the side of the road, bro? Like, unless you actually see it get hit, you know what the expiration date is on that.
But tell me if this ever works for you, Tyrus, as an excuse. Well, I was drinking a lot then. Does that ever work?
Does that excuse ever work? Why'd your marriage fail? I was drinking a lot then. Yeah, okay. Oh, well, okay. Are you drinking out? No? Okay, let's get remarried.
Don't need a counselor anymore.
No, I stopped drinking for the weekend.
Next, 50 years ago this morning, August 9th, 1974, Richard Nixon became the only president to resign from office. The Washington Post chronicles the whole thing. The resignation was less than 2 years after he won in a landslide in 72 by 49 states with 61% of the vote. We know Watergate was stupid, but now people say, why did you resign? Yeah, well, look at what all the, I mean, anybody else.
Well, back then,
that was
Gary Hart's got to be rolling over in his seat.
Right. It's like
he gave up because he had a
one photo.
One photo. It was done. Right. How could you?
Right.
And besmirched forever, never seen in public light. Now he'd get a reality show.
and then Nixon spent the rest of his time being an advisor to Clinton, and everybody called him afterwards.
Because he'd be the guy to call, like, hey, should we do this? No, don't do it.
What are they going to say about Trump? Yeah, you can make up stuff. I'm running right through the fire.
Yeah, I mean.
Try to impeach me.
Yeah, he's been impeached twice. He's literally bulletproof.
And now he's more popular than ever.
It might be too soon to make that joke.
Thanks, Tyrus.
Thank you.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.